Now, the new 940 Montreal presents The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman.
Good day, Montreal. I'm Beryl Wiseman, and this is The Last Angry Man. I'd like to begin with a little background on what we're going to be doing here today, because it's going to be innovative and it's going to be a new kind of radio. And it's going to be a wake-up call for the city. The management of the new 940 Montreal invited me to host this special series of innovative and incisive talk shows on Sundays from noon to 2. It's not going to be an ordinary experience. I'm president of something called the Institute for Public Affairs of Montreal, which is one of Canada's largest and broadest social action alliances. We've brought together over 2,000 community leaders to help people in trouble, to help people in need on an individual basis and an organizational basis. We came together because we were angry. And the choice of the name of the show by the new 940's management is very appropriate. We were angry that in a society of abundance, we've only produced a thin veneer of affluence. We were angry that in this society, we have disastrous and dangerous health policies. We were angry that in this society, we have spineless politicians who substitute cheap pork barrel vote-grabbing schemes in place of policies of purpose to correct those wrongs. And we believe there aren't enough Canadians left who get angry, plain angry, angry at all the bitchery and fraud. Everyone seems to just take it for granted. It's almost as if they like it, as if they want to be had. That's where we decided to be different. We knew we were being cheated and we didn't like it one tiny bit. We refused to acquiesce in our own self-abnegation. We got angry. And this is a time to be angry, my friends. For when a society is led by those motivated by a mistrust of the people qualified only by fear, instead of a trust in the people qualified only by prudence, it's time for some redemptive rage. It's time to stop appealing to the lowest common denominator and time to stop accepting a triumph of the mediocre. We don't do the work we do because we're saints. It's simply our firm belief that the highest and best use of our time, treasure, and talent is to advocate for a society that looks out for the other guy instead of one where we look over our shoulder at the other guy. A society that values cooperation over competition and compassion over contempt. It's simply a saner way to live. We have to learn to have the capacity to see the world through the eyes of its victims. We must marshal the resolve to challenge interests, not merely balance them. We must no longer be afraid to ask who holds power and by what right. As Martin Luther King Jr. once said, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. For in this age of instant communication and instant destruction, what affects anyone directly affects everyone indirectly. It's time to realize that we are truly a family of men. We are all mortal. We all cherish our future, and paying cost to the least amongst us, the least amongst us, diminishes us all. But this show will not merely be an exercise in talking the talk. We'll walk the walk. We'll bring to you many of the most compelling personalities you'll hear anywhere, not to pontificate. These guests, many of whom work with the Institute, are among the most effective social activists and guardians of the public interest in the country. They will bring to bear their experience and assets to guide, advise, and intercede on behalf of you, our callers. There comes a time when people get tired. Tired of being victims of injustice, of neglect, of unearned suffering. You all know people like this. I want to hear about them, I want to hear from them, and I want to hear from you. And to you I pledge that we will not just hear but listen, and do our best to get real solutions to your problems. This will be talk radio as you've never heard it before. We'll speak truth to power, and in so doing, we hope to empower all of you. An empowerment that'll help you conquer that gnawing sense of helplessness and impotence we all feel when faced with the spiritual brutality of institutional intolerance and indifference. We offer you our help so that you will never have to compromise the independence of your own individual consequence. And there is urgency in this, for we live today with the reality that our system presents all with great and agonizing dangers. We get caught in treadmills, we seek remedies against prejudices suffered, but our rights become compromised by intolerably long process of procedures. Relief comes too late. The process implodes from its own weight. Administrators of the public trust present nothing more than snares to the unwary. We've taken on major issues. We've helped food banks. We've helped anti-poverty groups. We've helped social housing groups. But it's about the thousand little pictures. The welfare mother who can't get her check. The small business person who's harassed by government inspectors. That's what we want to hear about. Your personal problems. The thousand little pictures of the thousands of the heroes that really make our society. And the people you'll meet today are there to help you.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. This is the new 940 Montreal. Let's talk. Call The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, at 790-0006.
Montreal, this is Beryl Wiseman back with you, The Last Angry Man on the new 940 Montreal. This show is about public advocacy and reaching out and educating the public and helping the public. In studio with me right now is Rick McConomy and John Angus. And before we get to our discussion and before we open the lines, we couldn't think of a better advocate to bring with us to set this program off than Julius Gray. Many of you know his name. He's perhaps Canada's leading constitutional and civil liberties attorney. But he's a man who doesn't just walk the walk, he talks the talk. Julius has been in courts, he's been on the front lines, he's been defending individual interests for the better part of a generation. Julius, good morning, good afternoon.
Well, I don't know if it's morning or afternoon, but it's just about the borderline.
It's the borderline. How are you today?
Okay, how are you?
Good. Julius, we wanted to lead off on a broader issue on public advocacy. And I want to quote something that you wrote in a recent article called John Humphrey's Human Rights Legacy, The Sovereignty of the Individual. Humphrey remained loyal to freedom of expression, of conscience, of association, and the right to a fair trial. Some restrictions were inevitable and often justifiable. But more than ever, and more than anything, he stood loyal to the sovereignty of the individual. When we all came to maturity, Julius, we would advocate at government on the great issues of the day. What has happened, in your opinion, in the past 20 years, where we now have to advocate for citizens against government?
Well, there are two major issues. First of all, of course, advocacy for individuals is important for those who are unpopular, who are unprotected, who are weak. Our society has become tremendously conformist, and it confuses human rights with its own view of politically correct. In other words, it has become a society of lobbies. The individuals in the lobbies don't particularly need assistance. But instead of asking ourselves what is just or what is not, or who is right, we ask ourselves about each individual, what is he a woman, or is she a woman, is the person gay, is the person a member of an ethnic lobby, minority, etc. We spend our whole time counting women on committees, counting how many francophones, how many anglophones, and we have forgotten those individuals who need help because of who they are individually, as opposed to their belonging or not to a popular lobby. So, you know, this whole political correctness,
a popular special interest group.
The whole propaganda of collectivism of the last 10 or 15 years, and you realize I'm not speaking from the right, not at all, but it's the forgetting of the fact that usually the person who needs advocacy is the weaker person. Now, the second problem, a very serious one, in criminal law and in areas of disciplinary law and so on, is that we've confused who is on trial, the victim or the accused. We forget that it's the accused who might end up in jail, not the victim, no matter how embarrassing it is for the victim, that it's the accused who might lose his license to practice in a professional matter. And all of that is fanned by hysteria about increasing insecurity and crime, when in fact, of course, all of the statistics point the other way. There's less crime. There's less insecurity because of demographic things, because there are fewer 18 to 20-year-olds, but also because there are better ways of solving crime technologically. But most people are convinced, and one of the saddest things I've seen this weekend was all four political parties
filing
subscribing
on
to this theory, even the NDP, when we all know that there is less crime, and that if we developed civil liberties 20 years ago or 25 years ago, there is less reason than ever for increasing penalties or spending Canada's money on building prisons the way the United States has done, instead of daycares and hospitals and so on. So that's the second problem. Then there's a third problem. The third problem, and again, remember, I'm not speaking from the right. The right often says things like that.
But no, you're very much speaking from the left and from the civil liberties perspective.
We have to note that there is a point about one of the arguments that we're over-bureaucratized. There are inspectors for everything. If you set up a plant somewhere, there's a million rules, most of which you don't know. Some environmental, and of course I'm not against environmental rules, but it's the pettiness, the inspections, the so on. Then there's, of course, tax and an incredibly complex tax law, which require, you know, nobody can do their own anymore. There are rules about permits, municipal permits, everything else. It's become so complicated.
Julius, are people scared? Has it just become a situation since Trudeau that people have become scared and put upon?
I think people are a little afraid. People are afraid for a number of reasons. One of them is the retreat of freedom of expression. It's clear now that if you are going to advance your own career, then there are all sorts of things you're not going to speak about. My wife always kicks me under the table when I speak of the Middle East anywhere. There are other issues that you have to be terribly careful what you say and how you say, and there's very little moral thinking behind it. For instance, we're going to crucify an employer who calls an employee lazy, even if he doesn't fire him, he doesn't do anything bad to him, because it was such an insensitive thing to say, but we're going to say nothing to one who fires somebody who's been with him for 30 years because he can get somebody else to do it a little more efficiently or a little more cheaply. In other words, there's no more morality, but people are afraid to talk.
Julius, we'll be right back with you, and I want to discuss what's happened since Trudeau tried to make the individual sovereign over the state, and we'll be back in 60 seconds.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. You're listening to the new 940 Montreal. Now, back to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman. Call Beryl at 790-0006.
I'm on with Julius Gray. Julius, Trudeau, what happened in the past 20 years? Trudeau tried to teach us with a charter that the individual can take the entire country to task. He turned Canada from a parliamentary to a constitutional democracy. Is it that people are scared, or is it that they're just so bloody confused they don't know where the hell to go in the bureaucracy?
Well, charters and constitutions are never the end of history. The United States has had a Bill of Rights since 1791, and yet there's been ups and downs and periods of McCarthyism, and right now is a terrible period in the history of the United States in terms of liberty. So, and of course, Bill of Rights didn't prevent slavery in its time, the selling of people, nor segregation. So a charter, which was an excellent thing, is only as good as it comes. But I think the charter, in order to get the charter and official bilingualism accepted, Mr. Trudeau had to make a concession, which I think is haunting us right now. That is multiculturalism. I think multiculturalism was a mistake, and the idea that there are a million cultures or there isn't a single dominant common culture, which Quebec, fortunately, has never accepted, and I think Quebec's position on this is much more sensible. I think that this has opened the world to to competing lobbies. Now, let's be clear, Canada is not the only place. In reading the paper today, you find that in Denmark, the fact that somebody wrote some cartoons of Muhammad is being challenged as though freedom of expression did not come first. In Canada, this takes a very funny form. You realize that we can and do make very strongly anti-clerical works. For instance, in Crazy, the film, one of the best Quebec films, the hero is latently gay, growing up under Duplessis and so on, is stifled by a church and the vision of a church. It would be highly risque to show somebody being stifled in his early days, for instance, by the synagogue and the rabbi. All sorts of people would come complaining. You remember all the attacks on Mordecai Richler for having said those things. And now it appears that in Europe, you have to be very careful about Muhammad, or perhaps about Buddha. And, you know, anti-clericalism is it cuts across all religions, but it's a legitimate position. It's something that the French intellectual tradition has had all the time in the 19th and 20th century. All sorts of Frenchmen rightly fulminated against the church. They're the ones who punished the church and the army for the Dreyfus Affair.
But those are the relations between people in a society, between cultural groups. What do you say to Montrealers? What do you say to Canadians who have fears, grievances with government? How do you make them feel more empowered?
Well,
what do you say to them?
I think people should use the charter, but in particular we should put less stress on the equality parts of the charter, on equality of groups. Worry less about anybody's development as a man or as a woman or as a Francophone or an Anglophone or a Ukrainian Canadian or a Jew, and more about their individuals and their individual rights. I think what
do individuals still count, Julius?
Well,
can we recapture the consequence of our own individuality?
They count, but it's less and less. And perhaps you could argue in a sort of macroeconomic way that the growing concentration of riches means that those who are powerful have more and those who are powerless have less, and therefore it's harder and harder for the little guy to maintain himself.
Do you ever despair of rousing the anger and the resolve of Canadians?
Well, I despair about it, but I think we have to continue doing it. I think we have to continue going to court and taking the charter. And I want personally to make it clear that the fundamental parts of the Charter, the ones that are written right away, are in Article 2, freedom of expression, freedom of conscience, religion and conscience, which means also beliefs such as anti-clericalism or atheism, which are protected, freedom of association. I mean, we've all forgotten, everybody attacks unions, etc. Freedom of and from association. We have a right to belong or not to belong without any recriminations either by big business or by big labor. And I think it's the primacy of those fundamental rights that has to be reestablished in a society which has gone crazy about groups and so on. Political parties look for somebody to represent one group and somebody else to represent another.
And that's the bottom line, the primacy of the individual.
The primacy of the individual, the primacy of the freedom of the individual, of the freedom of conscience of each one of us to think, no, I don't agree, or yes, I do agree, and I will act in accordance with those fundamental human dictates of conscience.
Julius Gray, the man who walks the walk, not just talks the talk, I thank you very much for your time, and we'll be back with you in a few moments with Rick McConomy and John Angus. Thank you,
bye-bye.
Julius Gray.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. This is the new 940 Montreal. Let's talk. Call The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, at 790-0006.
Montreal, this is Beryl Wiseman. I want to hear from you. 790-0006. You just heard Julius Gray. Do you feel too much bureaucracy, too much political correctness? You as an individual don't matter. Do you feel that political leaders are replacing policies that you need with nothing but vote-grabbing schemes to any special interest group that wants their little cut of the pie? We're going to go to John at Beaconsfield in a moment. I want to introduce again my guests in the studio, Rick McConomy and John Angus. Rick has been the president of the Bar of Montreal, the national president of the United Way, involved politically for years, even the Grand Marshal's St. Patrick's Day Parade, right, Rick?
Exactly, Beryl. And picking up on the remarks by Julius Gray, you know, there's a segment that's run in the La Presse in the last 4 days. The fifth will be tomorrow on the justice system and how it just simply isn't working, how it just isn't simply responding to people's needs. I know that there are human rights issues. We have two human rights commissions. I couldn't name you one judgment of either of those commissions that have made any meaning to any individual.
Do people know about them? Are they scared to go to them?
I think it's like the door is closed.
The government wants to hide it.
I was in the Commission des Normes de Travail the other day, and a mediator sat down and said, I don't speak English, I won't speak English, I won't accept any English documents, I don't want anything. I mean, how can you encourage people to exercise their rights when people won't listen?
They don't even know them. John Angus, national businessman, national philanthropist, in a previous life, member of the Big Blue Machine in Ontario. Did people feel that they could take more control of their lives then, and what the hell has happened?
You know, I think that over the years there's been a tremendous amount of power put into a smaller and smaller number of hands. All you have to do is look at the Prime Minister's office today. It has much more power than it did many years ago. Here in Montreal, you have such a huge number of people who represent the people out here that the people wouldn't know who to talk to if they tried.
Is the government the enemy? Are they making people scared purposely?
I think that the government's become sort of a self-perpetuating kind of thing that people get into, and they start to work to keep elected rather than to actually have a vision and bring the vision into focus for the people.
John from Beaconsfield.
Yeah, just to pick up on
are you fed up, John?
On what John said. Well, I was having a discussion with my 26-year-old, college-educated, a little bit world-travel son recently about the smoking. And he was saying, you know, why can't the government take out the addictive quality of tobacco, and then, you know, it would help people to get off smoking. And he was saying they won't do it because of money. It's just what John is, as if the government is there to perpetuate itself and not help us. I'm just going to...
Is this another one of these issues that's a fake issue? In other words, if the government wants to protect people's health, let them allow for smoking in non-smoking places. Is it not our choice what to do with ourselves?
No, but what about my concern is that a whole generation, you know, is sort of just tuning out of government. Here we are worrying about getting access. These guys, you know, he and his friends, I don't think they'd... I don't think they can be bothered with government. I'm going to have trouble getting out to vote, to exercise, you know, his democratic right. I just think we're losing them, and me myself, I don't know who would I phone to find out whether it's possible, or has anybody tried to get the addictive part of smoking out of tobacco.
Rick, why can't they get the young people to be interested?
I got a 26-year-old daughter, exactly the same situation you're talking about. She can make an internet transaction with Japan in 5 minutes. She goes to a lawyer for $500. He's going to tell her, well, your transaction went wrong. It'll take us 5 years to get through the court system. But gee whiz. No, they walk away from it. They want those things backed up with guarantees. They're creating other systems. The Internet creates a whole new system of carrying on business.
This question of tobacco, is this not really part of the culture, of the problematic political culture, where instead of governments addressing the real political and distributive problems, we've got a country with a third of our households below the poverty line. We've got a healthcare system that doesn't work, because politicians let provincial premiers decide what the hell they're going to do. We've got horrible problems in housing, and all we get are these little statocratic laws about smoking, and Gerald Kennedy in Ontario makes everybody wear helmets, and you got to go to school till you're 18. Is this not just cheap election fodder for the next time around without these guys really addressing real problems? And isn't this why young people don't care?
I think you're right. I think absolutely. We're chasing everything down that's an easy enemy. The enemy is poverty in this country. And the reality of it is that we've scrapped the whole process here in Quebec of fighting poverty. The PQ dropped it before the last election.
Yep. We'll be right back with you, John from Beaconsfield, and with Duff Conacher joining us from Toronto, the coordinator of Democracy Watch.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. You're listening to the new 940 Montreal. Now, back to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman. Call Beryl at 790-0006.
Montreal, Beryl Wiseman, The Last Angry Man, Rick McConomy and John Angus in studio. Let's hear from you. How mad are you about government bureaucracy? How mad are you about social statocratic engineering? 790-0006. Anthony from downtown.
Hi, Beryl. How are you doing?
Good. You?
Pretty good. I wanted to talk about the smoking issue for a second, if I could. I wanted to point out, first of all, that I don't think the government has it so wrong in as much as it's making it more difficult for people to smoke in some public spaces, because as much as smoking is a right for everybody to choose to do or not to do, it does impact on other people's rights, the rights of people who choose not to smoke. And so in that sense, they're on the right track in that they're moving in the right direction. But I think, as usual, they've gone too far, and their solution is simplistic, and what it doesn't do is cater to the restaurant and bar owners, for instance. restaurant and bar owners, I think, should be the ones who are making the decision about whether their operation should be smoking or non-smoking inside, yes or no.
Well, let's get off the business issue. I think, just to take a point from what Julius Gray was saying, there's a health issue, certainly, because smoke is not like drinking. Smoke is not passive. It's active. But he was talking about choices. In other words, if somebody wants to make a smoking restaurant, a smoking club, and if people choose to smoke without harming others, that choice has been taken away. It's about choices on a range of issues, not just smoking.
I agree completely. I mean, the bars and restaurants themselves should be able to choose what type of establishment they want to have, and then the public is allowed to choose which of those places they're going to go to. If you've got a bar, 95% of your clientele like to come in and have a smoke when they like to come in and drink. Now this new law is going to pass. These businesses are going to go out of business.
Is this not just a symptom of government that doesn't want to address the real issues of the day and are just trying to run between the raindrops to provide something to talk to the public about in the next election?
No, I think it's a significant issue, this one. I think there's a lot of people out there. There's a lot of employees who have to work in places where there is smoking.
Tell me, is it more significant than the fact that Jean Charest, before the last healthcare summit with Martin, announced a week before the summit that he was going to spend federal health dollars wherever he wanted instead of putting into the healthcare system? If this is a healthcare issue, why don't we badger all politicians to spend the money on health care, the side fringe issues?
But like you said at the very beginning of your show and in your introduction, it's not just about the big things, it's about the little things too. And I don't mind seeing government taking action to protect the people who are working in restaurants right now and are working in smoking environments, and would be preferring not to smoke in those smoking or work in those smoking environments. So laws like that I don't think are a big problem, but what's the problem is that the solution ends up being too simplistic. They create this blanket solution that doesn't take into account all the different aspects of what goes on commercially, publicly, in terms of people's individual freedoms. The solution is a bad solution.
Mind-dead solutions. Anthony, thank you.
You're welcome, Bill.
Rick wants to comment on this, but I just want to bring in Duff Conacher from Toronto. Duff, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. Just Montreal. Duff Conacher is a remarkable young man. For those of you who don't know, he is the coordinator of Democracy Watch, who's been running it for 12 years. It is the primary organization on government ethics in the country. Duff trained under Ralph Nader in the States and brought his expertise here. It is one of the only organization that's actually gotten a federal court ruling holding the ethics commissioner in violation of the Ethics Act. And Duff, we're going to get to you on the public issues of how low can we go in our political culture, but Rick wanted to say something on the smoking issue.
Just on the smoking issue, the idea of this kind of law is called a normative law. It's a law that you pass because you're going to change the way people act, the way people think. Okay? It's the old control by the government thing. Legislation is not intended for one group of people to decide what the right answer is and force it down someone else. They should be negotiating these things. They should be making a proper distribution of where the hit happens and where the exception happens and how this thing can be done. It's mismanagement of legislation. It's abuse of the legislative power. It becomes criminal to smoke somewhere. Doesn't make sense.
Man, it chokes off the people.
You got it.
Is it mindlessness, John?
I don't know whether it's mindlessness.
Government's without purpose?
Their purposes are confused these days. There are children on the street that have to be looked after. There are a lot of issues that have to be addressed. They're not being addressed. They're being seconded to silly things like this. Just the preposterous number of people involved in governing in Quebec these days. I don't know what the statistics are, Beryl. There's some incredible number of people.
They are truly incredible. Duff, how low can we go? Are we really a silly country nationally? We've got a third of our households living below the federal poverty line. We've got a third of our gainfully employed citizens facing tax rates so high they don't have more than 2 weeks of salary for their names. We've got massive economic concentration, and we've got governments that are busy enforcing laws that restrict what I do to myself and protect me from me instead of me from you. How much of this more can we take? How low can we go?
Well, we have a system that is set up so that anyone who is organized into a strong lobby group will get heard, especially if they have lobbyists moving in and out of the parties and moving in and out of government on a corrupt revolving door. And that system currently legalizes that kind of movement in and out of parties. There's several lobbyists working within the war rooms of the various parties on this federal election campaign. And given that government is a human process, and most humans make decisions based on influence of relationships and those who are scratching their backs and feel an obligation to help those people out, you have a very closed system to citizens, because the lobbyists that are working on in the war rooms,
Laws, are fringe legislations really meant to obfuscate from the public what's going on behind closed doors?
Well, sure. I mean, I have, based on another person, Michelle Brill Edwards, came up with initial few D's of government process, and I've expanded them to 8 D's of government process. And if you can't overcome those 8 D's, then your issue, your problem, will not be addressed. And unfortunately, because the consumers pay for the corporate lobby, and it's very easy for corporations to nickel and dime and loony and toony Canadians with extra service charges for banks or extra service fees for cable TV, telecommunications, little taxes on airline tickets, those kinds of things. The corporations are able to gather together millions of dollars to put into their advertising and their lobbying efforts.
Duff will be right back and talking more about the nickel and diming of Canadians.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. This is the new 940 Montreal. Let's talk. Call The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, at 790-0006.
Montreal, it's a Beryl Wiseman, The Last Angry Man, set in 790-0006. Call in and tell us, do you feel that what government is doing has no relevance to your lives? Duff Conacher is on from Toronto, coordinator of Democracy Watch, Rick McConomy, and John Angus with us in studio. Duff just raised the issue that the lobbyists, corporate interests, behind-the-doors interests, are really setting the agenda. I'm wondering, for all of you, are we being given something with one hand and just taking it away from the other by government? For example, at the federal level, we're talking about decriminalizing marijuana on the one hand. On the other hand, police are going to be given powers to stop cars at random without probable cause. We talk about whistleblower legislation that has no teeth. We talk about, for security's sake, having legislation that now requires the turning over of up to 8,000 files at any given time to state security apparatus, from internet, telephony, and email suppliers. How much control? Duff Conacher was talking about corporate control in Ottawa. Ottawa responds with control on citizens. Gentlemen, are we in a real crisis in this country? Duff, let's start with you.
Well, yes, as I was saying, the corporate lobbies have the means to build up lots of money, which means lots of lobbyists, and to recruit people coming out of government through a revolving door and then moving in and volunteering, so-called volunteering, in the war rooms of parties. And so they build up a relationship with politicians, especially at the in the Prime Minister's office and cabinet, and so they get their calls answered while the public's calls are ignored. And it's simply a system of a very strategic means of influence, of helping out, and then of course the politicians feel obliged to give the help back.
Why do you think, and Rick, John, I open the question to you as well, why do you think the policies that we're seeing out of Ottawa and even out of Quebec and even at local levels with cameras on the streets, why are the policies, the non-economic policies that we're seeing, beginning to be so restrictive of personal rights? Are the two in any way related?
Well, I think so, yes. The whole idea is, for these very powerful corporate interests, is to have the government do what they want, and for the government to distract the public from the fact that they're spending time not on the public's broad concerns, but instead spending time helping wealthy corporate and other private interests. So,
gentlemen, is anybody angry, or do we just put a lid on Canadians? Is anybody angry out there? Does anybody care about their own lives?
You know, here you have a case where the government takes the easy road, and they hit the small people. And they do things, as Duff said, to distract people. They're not doing things about the complicated things, the big issues of the day, We've allowed our military, for example, to almost be a disgrace, where that is the first responsibility of the federal government, not the last one. Things like this are just distractions, and they're annoying. And I think that the biggest problem facing us right now is that there's a lack of respect by the government of the people, and it is being felt the other way around. If you ask anybody on the street these days, do you respect a politician, what do you get? You get no.
Well, and that's because they have plenty of evidence that politicians have baited them with false promises in the past and switched direction when they get into power. So essentially just lying to the public. And then, of course, with the various scandals we've seen, cheating and stealing as well. So, I mean...
But, Duff, you've done advocacy for 12 years. Where is the people's voice? They bitch and they complain. But aren't you finding that they're not getting involved with organizations? Are they not getting involved with enough social action organizations? Don't they understand the power of a written letter to a politician? Or are they just sitting back and taking it and complaining over a beer?
I think while Canadians may not complain exactly at the right times or in the most effective ways, the polls show very clearly what they want, the issues they want addressed, such as honesty in politics and ethics and accountability overall and all sorts of other non-process issues, more substantive issues. And the government simply doesn't respond because they're spending so much time in the back rooms doing deals with the corporate lobbyists.
Rick, and these are not financial issues.
Structural problem. The system is the scandal, and it's not surprising to see scandalous behavior and to see government ignore public.
The system is the scandal, and Rick has something to say about non-financial.
The system is the scandal, and what we're listening in the current election is we're going to spend money on this, we're going to spend money on that, billion, 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 billion. What are you doing substantively? What are you doing? What is your ethics package?
On the ground.
Show us the package. Show us what the people are going to get. Show us what you're going to do about poverty.
Well, actually, on ethics, this one issue, the Conservatives have put forward a historic package that no party ever has in the history of Canada. It contains more than 50 measures that would do a large part of the cleaning up and increasing the government's accountability in very significant ways, including one of the most important things, taking away from the Prime Minister the sole power to appoint about 2,700 people who play a key role in enforcing the laws.
And we're going to come back and talk about this, Duff, but I'm going to pose a question to you when we come back. Are we really doing something effective, or is it just pandering to Canadians' desire to be virgins again?
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. Now, the new 940 Montreal presents The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman.
Montreal, good afternoon. This is Beryl Wiseman, The Last Angry Man. Let's talk. I want to hear from you. Do you feel that the government is just snowing you with all kinds of legislation and supposed protections that mean nothing and you can't get through the roadblocks? Call in 790-0006. On the line from Toronto, we have Duff Conacher with us, John Angus, and Rick McConomy in studio. Duff, just before I bring on Sharon from Coetzee Luke in this discussion, what I meant by my last comment where I said is this really effective legislation, or is this just politicians pandering to Canadians' desire for political correctness and to be political virgins? We know that we're going to have this ethics package that you've worked very hard on. But do you find, even in your work on government ethics, that the public understands it or has access to it? Or are the packages so laborious and the structures so difficult that people can't get in to make a complaint?
Well, The Ottawa is very much a closed shop. It's being pushed more and more to open, but it's opening very slowly. And essentially, overall, we have the illusion of a democratic government. And
that's a wonderful comment, a wonderful phrase, the illusion of a democratic government.
And illusion.
And what does that say about accessibility for citizens?
Sure, and it's very easy to have the illusion of a democracy, illusion of an ethical government accountable, because really the details are very, very important. Part of what the government's built up over the years is a very dense government that's difficult to decipher. And so that's the number one barrier, that it's boring to do this work, literally, to try and figure out what the government's doing, to read the policy statements. They're often drafted in obscure language that's meant to shut out the public.
And Sharon from Côte-Saint-Luke.
Hi,
Duff Conacher has said we're living under the illusion. Are we living under illusions, or are we deluded, and are we deluding ourselves?
Okay, a couple of... Am I on?
Yes, you are.
Okay, a couple of things. I think the show is fabulous. It provides an opportunity for people to call in and also to help. I was particularly concerned when you said, somebody said that when they tried to go to Norme de Travail, they wouldn't accept any documents in English.
That was Rick McConaughey made that comment.
Right. Several things is, number one, if anybody has any problem with any government agency, the person to call is the ombudsman's office, and I have a phone number at 873-2032. That's the first line in. They're normally very good.
Sharon, I just have to pause for a second. I want to ask Duff something. Duff, Sharon, the Quebec environment, as you know, we have a quarter of the population or a fifth of the population of the state of California, and we have four times the number of bureaucrats. Ottawa's pretty bureaucratized itself. If a citizen can't find where to go, where do they call? Is there a central station like Sharon just given us for Quebec?
No, there isn't a federal ombuds office. And unfortunately, I don't think it would improve that things that much. I mean, you can call Reference Canada. Just look in the blue pages of any telephone book, and they'll be able to help you find out the office.
Don't you think people would want a central number to call, a central ombudsman?
Well,
Sharon, don't you think it helps in Montreal?
That is the central number, the Reference Canada number. But
which I have to admit, and I've been in politics 25 years, or in public life 25, I've never heard that there's such a thing as Reference Canada. Have you, Sharon? Have you, Rick?
Never, but the thing that I'm...
John?
No.
The thing I'm concerned about is why don't they ever advertise these big numbers, because they really don't...
Because this is La La Land on the Rideau. It's the same couple of hundred people talking to each other, and they think that Canada really listens. We'll be back with more of this. Are we really being served by our governments, or are we just being taken to the cleaners?
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. This is the new 940 Montreal. Let's talk. Call The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, at 790-0006.
Hello, Montreal. Beryl Wiseman, The Last Angry Man. Let's talk. Are you fed up with government giving you snow jobs, not being accessible, and not dealing with your problems? 790-0006. On the line from Toronto, Duff Connick, a coordinator of Democracy Watch, in studio with us, Rick McConaughey and John Angus, Sharon from Kosalungas on the phone. Duff, I want to pursue one last point that Sharon brought up. You've done great work on government ethics. Don't you sometimes feel frustrated that citizens can't even see the work you do, other than outside of a small political community?
Well, the politicians and the public officials are all in a conflict of interest when looking at the issue of their own accountability. And that's why we've gone for 137 years without an effective government accountability system. And
But as part of that system, Sharon, wouldn't you like to see a number to call into Ottawa and just let off some steam?
Not only would I like to see a number, I'd like to see the government start advertising phone numbers for the Human Rights Commission.
Right on.
And
Rick's with you on that one.
I know, because they don't. They advertise for flags, for Canada, for everything, but they're not advertising how people can have access when they have problems.
Their willingness to help you by their willingness to put themselves out there and put the number in the paper.
Absolutely.
Too many places are afraid of the volume that they're going to get,
right,
or that somebody's going to think that they're making a political statement by saying minorities and English and other people should be able to phone in and complain.
Yeah, ethics laws are very important, and ethics packages are very important, but what a lot of people don't know is that there are ethics departments in almost every department of the federal government. But try and find the number of the ethics officer.
There's a secret.
But they also see, I mean, it's either the rules have loopholes or the enforcement agencies are hampered by lack of powers, all of them, lack of resources on purpose. The governments don't give them the budgets they need to do the job, or a lack of powers to penalize. And that's why the system is the scandal. It's designed to create the illusion on
Margaret
paper.
Margaret Sloan?
that we have a democratic, accountable government, when in fact, if you try and hold it accountable or participate as a citizen, you find that there's more walls than there are doors in the walls.
Absolutely.
So let's get together and do something. Let's call these things in and let's do it.
Well, the Conservatives package, again, has 50 measures that would empower, clean up the rules, empower the watchdogs, give them more resources, and also increase the penalties.
Is it going to tell people how they can access and how they can complain, or is it just going to leave it up to the guys in Ottawa to deal with?
That's right.
No, well, it will create quite a bit more resources and close a lot of the loopholes in the system. It really is a historic package. It set the high bar. Finally, we have one party setting out a package that will, if it was the package Democracy Watch had designed, it would have had 70 measures. It has 52, and it will do a lot, other than, of course, the big difficult area of what we do with the Senate. But in a lot of other areas, it will very much increase the government's accountability, and we'll see whether the Liberals or the other parties respond before Election Day in 2 weeks. But so far, they haven't. The NDP has a package of 20 measures, which is far, far weaker than the Conservatives' package, and that's part of the reason why I think the Conservatives are being rewarded with greater support in the polls as time goes by, because people realize they're going to take some serious action on these long-standing problems that are fundamental. I mean, if you're concerned about any issue or any problem in society, you have to be concerned about government accountability, because the lack of government accountability right now means that the government does not have to address issues and problems. They can get away with ignoring the public's broad concerns.
Sharon, I want to thank you, and hopefully we'll get a number from the Conservatives that we can all call in.
I give you the number to the Human Rights Commission?
Yes, you can, but we're backed up on call, so give it quickly, please.
873-51-46. And the Ombudsman's Office is 873-2032.
Thank you very much, Sharon.
Thank you, and good luck.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Margaret from NDG.
Yes, hello.
How are you? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Look, I'm listening to this, and I'm just flabbergasted by what I hear. First of all, this last lady here, Sharon, giving to the station the number for the Ombudsman and the Human Rights Commission. I think that everybody should know that both these organizations is the same exact problem like anybody in the government. They railroad everybody from one end to the other. They make it very difficult. They complicate your life. They harass you until the end so that you give up and don't bother them anymore.
You're absolutely right. So isn't it good that Montrealers know the number so that they can call them and give them a little heck?
Well, it doesn't work, see.
It does work if enough people call. Margaret, you have to understand something. When you send one letter from one citizen, a minister, when a minister sees a written letter or a typed letter from a citizen, mm-hmm. he assumes that if that person took the time to do that letter, he's talking for 100 people.
Yes,
and this is something I try to train groups in and to make citizens understand. That's part of your empowerment.
Can I tell you something else? Okay, let me give you an example here. I have been railroaded for 8 years right now with a problem that is unresolvable because those that are involved, they refuse to resolve it. First, the police in NDG, the chief down to everybody, the sergeant. I had to put up with a stalker for 8 years, a criminal harasser. He injured my dogs to the point that I had to kill them on my own property. I had to put them asleep.
Margaret, we're going a little far afield. What I'm going to do is you're going to give the details to our producer and to our associate, Val.
If I may.
We'll continue the discussion after.
I went to court myself.
Yes, I understand.
I took the case into my own hands. I went to court and I did my own legal work. Luckily, I studied law a long time ago, and I was able to do this. So then I get railroaded in the courts. The courts tell me, get yourself a lawyer.
Margaret, that's why the Institute does what it does. We're there to help people that the system cannot help. And that's why you're going to talk to Val right now, and you're going to give him the details of your problem, and we'll come back and talk about whether any institutions or any set of rules are really going to reach the people on the ground.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. You're listening to the new 940 Montreal. Now, back to the Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman. Call Beryl at 790-0006.
Montreal, Beryl Wiseman, Last Angry Man. Let's talk about how to make you as citizens more effective. Call in 790-0006. In studio, Rick McConomy and John Angus. On the line from Toronto, Duff Conacher, coordinator of Democracy Watch. We're going to be talking about how to make legislation and proposals really relevant to the people on the ground. But I want to tell everybody that Duff Conacher has done remarkable work, and you should all go to his website, www.dwatch.ca. This is a truly unique organization that for a dozen years has been, as Churchill used to say, nipping at the ass and tucking at the heels of the government to make them come into line. Duff, what do you say to people who just say, okay, the work you're doing is wonderful, you're a saint, the legislation is perfect, we don't have access? Rick, what do you do? John, Duff, what do you do?
Well, it's a difficult problem. We've had 138 years since Confederation, and building up this dense government that's difficult to navigate. And even corporations hire lobbyists who have come in from the come out from the inside of government to help them with all their resources. They still need that help. That's part of the corruption, that they can afford to hire these lobbyists that usually are ex-ministers or ex-minister staff.
And but Duff, even put lobbyists aside, how effective can a citizen, how much confidence, I should say, should a citizen have in the finest piece of ethics legislation when, number one, they don't know who to call, number two, it's not advertised who to call, and number three, we don't know what the process is going on?
Exactly. Well, that's why it's an ongoing struggle, and the politicians and public officials are resisting because it will all increase their accountability, and that's why it's an enormous struggle to actually form what should be called the democratic accountability government. We call all sorts of governments around the world democratic and accountability and accountable, but if you actually scratch them and try to hold them accountable or participate, you'll find that the barriers are enormous and that it's not an effective system. And that's why we just have to keep working at it. I mean, we can't abandon it and just say, oh, well, no, just give up, because that's what the politicians and public officials want.
But for the best pieces of legislation, should it not be an obligation on government, not merely to do the legislation and then put it aside, but to let people know how they can use it? And you've heard the frustration all afternoon.
Oh, definitely. But, of course.
What do we do about that?
Well, you just have to keep pushing and struggling. I mean, really, if you give up, and what's amazing to us is we started Democracy Watch 12 years ago, and there had never been a group that focused on this issue of the fundamental accountability mechanisms, and Canada has...
But more than accountability, have you ever worked, for example, not just on legislation and not just on presentation of recommendations for more transparency in government, but how to do the flip side, how to bring citizens in with you?
Oh, Duff, sure. Is it time perhaps to put some civics courses back into schools so that kids know what to do, that they have some expectation that they can affect their environment, that they can actually get something done?
Oh, definitely, and that's been called for by a lot of people, and of course the governments aren't acting on it because they don't want a trained generation that's highly skilled at holding them accountable and participating in policy-making processes. They don't want that. It's all against their own self-interest of having power without accountability.
So we have
really, the problem with the political system is the politicians and the government employees. They get all this power, and unfortunately, right from the get-go in 1867, their power was not set up to be accountable and open to citizen participation. And what's amazing to us is we started in 1993, and Canada had existed for more than 120 years at that time. And yet there had never been a group pushing for to close these fundamental gaps. And so citizens, in a way, and certainly citizen activists and citizen groups across Canada, had been negligent for 120 years because they'd let this system roll on, totally unaccountable, totally shut out to citizens, and not even pushed to have the basic mechanism of the civics courses, because they never have existed. There never have been an effective advocacy course in any school or system across the country.
And we're going to be right back to discuss what Duff does on the legislature side and what Rick is going to propose for how to make citizens more effective.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. This is the new 940 Montreal. Let's talk. Call The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, at 790-0006.
Montreal, 790-0006. I'm Beryl Wiseman, The Last Angry Man. We're talking to Duff Conacher, coordinator of Democracy Watch in Toronto, Rick McConomy and John Angus in studio. Let's see what we can do about all this, citizens of Canada. We've got an election coming up, right? And there in Montreal today, the party leaders are preparing for two debates. Now, Duff, you have endorsed the Tory ethics package with the proviso that it's missing five elements. But more importantly, do you think that what will help this country will be the basic Tory philosophy of rolling back big government and stopping to protect us from ourselves and getting the social engineering stuff out of our hair? Is that going to help ethics? And is that going to help the government?
Well, I'm not sure about that. I don't know about those elements of their platform. I guess they've only talked about one in detail, which is canceling the gun registry. But overall, I mean, if you're concerned about an issue, you want the government to address it. If the government's more accountable, more open, required to be more ethical, waste preventing, and act in more representative ways, that's going to help. And the one big area that the Tories package does not address is honesty in politics, which the first debate and every single poll has shown Canadians want an honesty in politics law that's enforceable, so they know what they're getting when they vote, and that they can't be lied to or misled by any government in power. And the other area is real representation. They're not proposing this kind of system of where government would be forced to reach out to the public, let them know what the government's considering, and consult with them in a meaningful way. And they do this regularly at every level of government in Sweden, and it's something we also need. Two key things missing from the Tories package, but otherwise, so far, it is the best package that any of the parties
understood. Rick, we know that the work Duff has done in Canada is groundbreaking, but is there not an agonizing risk and danger to Canadians that we're going to get so over-bureaucratized, even on the good things like accountability, that we won't get anything done because politicians are going to be afraid to go to the bathroom without going to three committees?
Our system is locked into a battle between institutions. They're talking now about Paul Martin is running against the RCMP. Okay?
That should be a pretty good game.
I mean, an incumbent is supposed to be telling you what they did. They don't want to tell you what they did. They're going to tell you about how much money they're going to
spend. Well, the Liberals have been telling us what all their new stuff, but that's from the 93 Red Book, I think. I'm not,
yes.
I don't know. You remember it as well as I do.
Already promised and never delivered. I mean, he wrapped himself, did Mr. Martin, in the Bill of Rights, the last debate around.
And now?
And now he can wrap himself in the criminal code. I mean, it's insane. It doesn't make sense that we should be running an election where every day something new comes out. But on the other hand, you look at the people that are doing it. Pettigrew is being chased by Lester. Lester, who's the biggest anti-English. He wrote the book, what was it? The
Le Livre Noir.
Le Livre Noir. Le Livre Noir. Le Canada. The Canada.
Now, that wasn't a relation to le noirceur, was it, of the 50s?
I don't know. We seem to be wanting the noirceur to come back. I mean, I thought that when we did the quiet revolution in this province,
we wouldn't go back to the future.
Was buying in.
Right.
5 years later, we elected the Union Nationale.
Scott from Lachute.
Hey, guys.
How mad are you? Let's talk.
Well, last week I had written a letter to the editor that the National Post printed, and I just want to expand upon it a little bit.
Let's go.
I would say at this point, any Federalist still voting Liberal is making a huge mistake and is putting our country at peril. And I'll tell you why. People like myself, and I think there's a lot of us out there who were liberals our whole lives, cannot do it anymore. I can't do it morally. I can't vote for them. Ethically, I can't vote for them. So those that are too afraid to make a change and keep voting liberal, those of us with integrity and courage will not.
Just too much arrogance already.
Well, therefore, what's going to happen is those people that fail to look at the facts, if they continue to vote liberal, those of us who pay attention and vote conservative, the people voting liberal will be the ones splitting the vote, thus allowing the bloc in very, very big.
Yeah, I can't understand the block. I mean, for years, I mean, Henri Bourassa in the teens, the 1900s, the beginning of the century, Ray Alcoët, they went for some personality thing, period. I mean, I can't see the attraction for Francophones to be going with the block. If the option of separation is going to work, it's going to work because we're intelligently negotiating it, not electing a bunch of people to go to Ottawa who will not get you the services, will not get you the response, will not get you the things that you need in your area, and they've excluded themselves from the federal system.
We're going to come right back and see who we can vote for with or without holding our nose, with Scott from Lachute, Rick McConomy, John Angus, and Duff Conacher.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. You're listening to the new 940 Montreal. Now, back to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman. Call Beryl at 790-0006.
Montreal, let's talk. 790-0006. We've got Rick McConomy and John Angus in studio. Duff Conacher, coordinator of Democracy Watch in Toronto, and Scott from Lachute. And we're talking about, is there anybody we can vote for? And Scott just said, lifelong liberals, like many of us on this conversation, perhaps. But is it a problem only just of ethics, Rick McConomy? Or is it a problem that we had a liberal party that had two parallel sets of problems? One was the advertising scandal, which is a government program that went bad through greed and avarice by exception, and the other with a myriad number of conflicts of Paul Martin while he was finance minister, which seemed to be the rule, not the exception. So the $167 million in contracts to CSL, the offshore corporations, how hard do we have to hold our nose?
The curse in Canadian politics is if you're a finance minister, you're going to get hammered when you become prime minister. Happened to John Turner. It's happening to Paul Martin.
But Paul Martin cannot focus beyond throwing
money at the problem.
But Rick, Duff, and Scott, and John, and everybody out there in Montreal, should we not have a system that says to a man of wealth and means and consequence, you want your privilege and preference in business? Stay in business. You want to go into public service? Then remember what Harry Truman said. 1% of the people can buy access to senators and congressmen. The job of the chief executive is to represent the 99% who can't. And it is no longer acceptable for any connection of this kind of wealth by any man who wants this kind of power.
One thing I'd like to add, guys, I think when AdsCamp first broke, many of us were willing to give Paul Martin the benefit of the doubt. We said, well, maybe he really didn't know, so we can't really challenge his ethics. But then now, once he became prime minister, you'll see who he appointed as senators. One of them was Art Eagleton. Now, Mr. Eagleton was thrown out of government for giving untendered contracts to his own girlfriend. He was slammed by the ethics commissioner. Now, this man, Mr. Martin, that's going to clean up government, just awarded Mr. Eagleton a senator seat. So how do we take him seriously at all? I can't anymore.
Duff, how do we take anybody seriously anymore?
Well, in addition, I mean, Paul Martin's own scandal is that 60 corporations all registered to lobby the Prime Minister's office gave him $2.5 million in money or in kind.
Would you repeat that slowly?
60 corporations.
60 corporations.
And corporate lobby firms like Earnscliffe, the lobby firm that represents corporations that's been helping him out for years, gave him $2.5 million in donations and in-kind services for his leadership campaign. So Paul Martin was bought and sold many times over before becoming prime minister, and according to just basic common sense, all those corporations did him a favor by financing his leadership campaign.
Duff, help me out here, but there seems to be in the back of my fevered imagination some story that when Paul Martin was finance minister in 1998, he had a meeting with Howard Wilson and the president of CSL to discuss certain financial transactions with President Suharto in Indonesia?
Yes, well,
how does a finance minister get to go to an ethics counselor when he's supposed to be in a blind trust?
Well, this is part of the loopholes in the rules and the ethics code, which has existed now for 20 years. Actually, this January, this month, the ethics code for cabinet ministers came into effect, and it's never been enforced, and Democracy Watch has the current ethics commissioner.
You mean cabinet ministers get to do business and go to the ethics commissioner and talk about their business?
There's The rules are very strong, except for this loophole on the blind trust. But otherwise, the rules are strong. They've never been...
That's kind of not a loophole. That's kind of like a gaping hole caused by a tsunami.
Indeed, but the other rules are very strong, require the highest ethical standards in the world, but they are not being enforced because they require...
Well, yeah, but strong or not. Scott, how do you feel as a voter that we've got this, quote, loophole, unquote, that allows a minister to talk to the ethics commissioner about his private affairs that are supposed to be in a blind trust?
Well, I think up until this point, I think anyone who's paid any attention over the past several months realizes that the ethics commissioner really has no teeth and reports to the prime minister. So I find it laughable that we could actually call him an ethics commissioner.
Well, that's why we have him in court right now, challenging him for bias because of his actions, which have essentially, in his first year in office,
Rick, go for it.
Been to protect cabinet ministers and others from real accountability. And it's one of the most fundamental struggles. If we win these cases, it will be as important as the coming into effect of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms in terms of its effect on government accountability.
You're absolutely right, and it's about time.
And Rick, don't forget that Duff has already won one. Duff, you've won one federal court judgment, correct?
Yeah, we got rid of the old ethics counselor who actually had no powers at all, and it was just a front for the Prime Minister, Chrétien. The new ethics commissioner is still selected by the Prime Minister, but is an officer of Parliament. But unfortunately, it's Bernard Shapiro is his name, that many people in Montreal would know the name. And he has no experience, no expertise, and he's done everything he can to let people off the hook in every case that's been presented before him in his first year of office, as well as making all sorts of statements, making it clear that he will never enforce the rules, has no intention to.
He's made it clear that he'll never enforce the rules.
Yes.
This was a policy statement.
Yes.
Tremendous. You must be really happy about that.
Oh, indeed. And,
unbelievable.
And we have a dozen actions and statements by him in 1 year of office. And his office, according to the Supreme Court of Canada, they've ruled on the importance of these codes. And the Supreme Court of Canada in a 1996 ruling said, you will not have a democratic government if these codes are not strong and if they are not strictly enforced.
We'll come back with more on the ethics commissioner who says he's not going to enforce the rules right after this.
You're listening to The Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, on the new 940 Montreal. This is the new 940 Montreal. Let's talk. Call the Last Angry Man, Beryl Wiseman, at 790-0006.
Hello, Montreal. Beryl Wiseman again with Rick McConomy, John Angus, Duff Conacher in Toronto, and Scott from Lachute. And we're talking about an ethics commissioner who says he's not going to enforce the rules. Scott, you don't seem like a guy, a citizen who is worried about getting out there. How do you tell your friends, write letters, go, yell, scream, pound at the gates of power?
Well, I've been talking to people for almost a year now, and what I'm finding is you get a lot of people that, like me, were raised, you have to vote Liberal or we're going to separate. And
the whole sky will fall in.
Well, that's it. And, you know, you'll hear these things, like the ones that crack me up the most are like friends of mine will say, well, my parents voted Liberal, I'm voting Liberal. And I
very, very rational way to make a decision, of course, on policy.
Well, it's quite sad because these are intelligent people. The other one I hear, which absolutely lowers my pride of this country, is when I hear someone say, well, we can't vote for Harper because they're a bunch of yahoos from out west. Well, what kind of country do we have if we refuse to elect a prime minister because he lives in Calgary?
They also forget, of course, that he's from Toronto, but, you know.
Well, that's what I mean.
So we cannot elect a man who's lived in Toronto, worked in Vancouver, lives in Calgary, and lived in Ottawa. That's...
Well, that's it, because what happens is you'll find that you talk to most Liberals, and let's say, I mean, they're great people, I love them, and they mean well, but it seems that they find every excuse possible to vote Liberal. And it comes to a point where some of us have just, we can't do it anymore. I can't do it. If the Canadian people re-elect the Liberals, I got to honestly tell you that when the referendum comes, I'm going to have to seriously contemplate whether I vote yes or no, because I would be ashamed of this country if we showed such a lack of integrity that we would vote for people who stole from us. I mean, above all else, guys, look, you look at the issues. You got your gay marriage issue. You got whatever issue you want to look at. But above all, I think all Canadians would agree that stealing taxpayers' money is just not acceptable. And for those that would try and condone it and vote liberal, frankly, I'm ashamed of them.
Rick, just before you make your comments, we're being reined in by our great producer, Larry Marcus. I want to thank. So, Rick, address what Scott had to say.
I'm a lifelong liberal. Scott, I get the same problem that you got. I can't see myself doing it this time. Luckily, I have somebody called Louise Sullivan who's running in my riding, and hopefully I can bite the bullet and get out there and have some courage for a change.
Montreal, we hope we've delivered one promise today in this first show of ours. We're not going to calm you with what you want to hear, but we hope we strengthened you with what you need to know and to know where to go to get help and to get some politics of purpose. Our number at the Institute is 514-875-4884. Our website is www.iapm.ca. You can contact me directly at info@iapm.ca. I want to thank Rick McConomy, John Angus, Duff Conacher from Toronto, Julius Gray, and I want to remind all Montrealers, you want to get even, get mad, but that's not enough to get mad. You've got to get engaged. And remember the words of Robert Kennedy a generation ago. Each time someone stands up for an ideal or acts to improve the lot of others or strikes out against injustice, they send out a tiny ripple of hope. And crossing each other from thousands of different centers of energy and daring, those ripples build a current that can sweep down the mightiest walls of resistance and indifference. We can help you become a center of energy and daring. Montreal, thank you very much.
Beryl Wiseman is the president of the Institute for Public Affairs of Montreal.